Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you'd experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This article was published on the 5th of August, 2021, and is entitled Western Electric. At 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, August 4th, my 15-year-old daughter and I pulled up the Jaguar I-Pace electric car in front of my 91-year-old mom's place in Regina, Saskatchewan. I was tired and achy because I had just finished driving 1,725 kilometers, which is 1,072 miles, across 2 days to see her for the first time since COVID started. I was happy to see mom, happy about the first road trip in a long time, and happy to have tested the hypothesis that, in 2021, a fully electric vehicle can handle long-haul travel. And the picture shows my mom standing behind the Jag I-Pace, which is a beautiful blue color, and her hair looks just like the Queen's. My mom welcoming us to Saskatchewan. Normally, she doesn't look like the Queen. This essay gathers together the data from the trip and tries to draw conclusions. There's also a link, real-time Twitter thread with typos and bad pictures. To my non-metric readers, sorry, it's in kilometers. I'll convert a few of the key met numbers. The experience. It was pretty wonderful, actually. The Jaguar is a comfortable modern car with great seats, good audio, and all the automation you'd expect. It has awesome overwhelming acceleration power for when you're in a tricky passing situation. My daughter was excellent company. Cruising along a good road, and a lot of the Trans-Canada Highway is, becomes a pretty pleasing experience. The worst part, by a wide margin, was the wildfire smoke between us and some of the world's most fantastic scenery. But that's a symptom of the onrushing climate crisis, and one of the best things we can do to mitigate the devastation is to stop burning fossil fuels to travel. And here's a picture of the car charging up at a mall parking lot in Calgary with a very smoky sky and the sun as an orb in it. And the caption is, "Smoky sun while charging in West Hills Mall, Calgary." Of course, this road trip was different from any previous experience, because charging. In a fossil car, you don't have to think. You just wait for the tank to get a half or three quarters down, pull over at the next station. Recharging requires planning. Fortunately, the tools are pretty good. More on that below. The chargers. One reason I decided this experience was worth trying was Petro-Canada's message about their Link Electric Highway program, and I quote, "We have a charger every 250 kilometers or less from Halifax, Nova Scotia to Victoria, BC. There's one not far from where I live in Vancouver. I tried it, and it worked first time, with just a credit card tap. No fuss, no muss." Trouble is, that quote is kind of a lie. There are gaps, and that's when all the chargers are working, which fairly regularly they're not. But my experience is that Petro-Can, while good, is never your only charging option. Some background is required here. High power, fast DC chargers come at multiple power levels. I saw 50, 100, 200, and 350 kilowatts. The difference makes a difference. Our Jag can really only charge at 100 kilowatts, but my personal perception is that the higher power chargers fill up that last 20% much faster. And it feels complicated. For example, in my experience with a Co-op Connect charger rated at only 100 kilowatts, it felt faster. When you use these things, they feel like first-generation tech, pushing the edges of what's possible, or at least maintainable. In particular, when you plug a 350-watt-kilowatt charger into a car with really low battery, once it's finished sinking and starts pumping electron, the sound torques up like a 747 taking off. And the installations include huge, multiple big tall metal boxes. See the picture below. Also, a great big thick connecting wire that connects the charger to your car gets super hot to the touch. And here's a picture of the Jag late at night in the dark, glowing blue, charging from these Petro-Canada chargers that are glowing red. It's a nice dramatic picture, and the caption says, "Charging can be glamorous." Anyhow, my impression of the Petro-Can network remains mostly positive. Although, I have to say, podcast note, since I wrote this, I came back on the same route and had some problems with them. A lot of them are broken at any one point in time. They need to take maintenance a lot more seriously. Anyhow, the machines work well. It's annoying that some of them are 100 kilowatts, some 200, and some 350 for no obvious reason. It's annoying that sometimes they're stuck into a weird, grubby back corner of the lot in a way that makes it hard to get your car in the right position to reach the charging port with the wire. But good on them. Electrify Canada, that's a link, is another organization that's promising a national network of fast chargers. They're a partner of Electrify America, constructed by Volkswagen as part of their settlement over cheating on emissions testing. Anyhow, maybe they'll be great someday. Once I was far enough into the trip to have Petrocan fully worked out, I tried to find an Electrify charger in working condition but failed. Podcast-only note, I did find one in Calgary and tried it out, and I wasn't terribly impressed. I mean, it worked, and I got some charge, but it wasn't terribly fast, not as fast as the Petrocan of the same rated wattage. And the app was kind of broken. It failed to work, but then started the charging anyhow, and its estimate of how long was remaining was stupidly broken and so on. Not really recommended. If you're okay with using 50 kilowatt chargers, there are loads and loads of options. Many smaller town visitor centers and chambers of commerce put one in, as has my own electrical utility, BC Hydro. But once you've worked with a higher power charger, they're just not a satisfying experience. The numbers. So there's this huge, huge table, and here's some commentary on it. Each line in the table below represents one driving leg and includes the charging experience at the beginning of that leg, thus absent on each day's initial leg. I think the column headings are mostly pretty obvious, except perhaps for, well, I'm going to skip over the text here and just read you the column headings with commentary. There are two data sources. The drive time data here is from Jaguar's trip logging via their InControl app, thus the awkwardness caused by non-charge roadside stops. The charge time data is the output from the various charging sessions along the way. I'm certain that neither is perfect, but the results seem intuitively in the right neighborhood based on my experience. So for charging, the column headings are start time, end time, charge time, kilowatt hours charged, dollars, money spent, the dollar per kilowatt hours, the kilowatt hours per hour, which is to say how fast the electricity got pumped in, the kilometers per charge hour, which is how many kilometers of range you get for each hour you charge, and the network it was on. I tried the Petro-Canada network, the Flow network, the Co-op Connect network on this leg of the trip. And then while you were driving, we have a column for start, for end, that's location, for example, Vancouver and Hope, the drive time, the kilometers, the speed, the amount of electricity that was regenerated, and the kilowatt hours per 100 kilometers. Now, I'm not going to read you all this data, but I will read the totals. The total charge time was 6 hours and 24 minutes. The total kilowatt hours charged were 392.2. The total money spent was $120.52 Canadian. The dollars per kilowatt hour on average was 31 cents. The kilowatt hours per hour averaged to 52.7. The kilometers per charge hour averaged 212.7. The total drive time was 17 hours and 42 minutes. The average leg was 1 hour and 28 minutes. The kilometers I drove was 1724.9. The average per leg was 143.74. The average speed was 97.5 kilometers per hour. The total regen was 26.6, which isn't much at all. And the average kilowatt hours per 100 kilometers was 24.8. So let's have a closer look at the numbers that seem interesting. The charge time. 17 hours and 42 minutes of driving and 6 hours and 24 minutes of charging, including one evening charge after the day's drive was finished. Not that great on the face of it. Now, it clearly could have been less. Since my confidence that any given charger would just work started out weak, I was carefully allowing for failures and not running the battery very low. Later on in the trip, as I gained confidence, specifically in the Petro-Canada network, I was willing to take on things like the Calgary to Medicine Hat leg, 2 hours and 43 minutes and 285.9 kilometers, running the battery from 90% down to 11%. Also, my daughter is, after all, a teenager, and perhaps not as quite as quick as I, moving through cafes and restrooms and so on. Also note that the legs are kind of short. This car can go 400 kilometers on a charge, but not when you're on a big, wide, modern prairie highway with almost no other traffic blasting along at 110 kilometers an hour, which is like 65 miles per hour, or more, continuously. I think you'd find this true of pretty well every electric vehicle. But here's the thing, it didn't feel excessive. I can only remember a total of maybe 15 minutes when we were consciously just hanging, waiting for charge. Most places, we got a coffee or lunch, hit the bathroom, took a walk around the block for our knees' sake, and then it was time to unplug and go. Having said that, this is a 2019 model year car, and the charging technology is improving. If we'd had a Porsche Taycan and nothing but 350 kilowatt chargers, the story would have been very different. Will the fast charging technology make the leap into the mainstream car price plane? Will 350 kilowatt chargers become ubiquitous? I'd like to know. Here's another post-podcast note. It turns out that the Hyundai Ioniq 5, recently launched, has has the same kind of fast charging circuit as the Porsche Taycan, which is like several times its price, which is a very strong signal that really fast charging will make its way into a whole lot of electric cars, and that'll change the picture described in this piece. In this context, there's another number that I think is really interesting, the kilometers per charge hour, how far you can get on an hour's charge. For this particular car, on this selection of charges, it was over 200 kilometers, which is 124 miles, per charge hour. I think that's enough, maybe in the lower regions of enough, but there, and as I said, it looks like the future, this is going to be better. And finally, I suspect every driving safety professional would beam in approval of a power system that forces you to get out of the car and move around every couple of hundred kilometers. So how about dollars? It costs us $120.52 in electricity. Is that a lot or a little? I tentatively think they're undercharging. While the electricity itself may be cheap, the charging infrastructure isn't. If this is going to work, the charging networks are going to have to make money, and I don't see it at these prices. Bear in mind that at home with a level 2 charger in the carport, charging feels close to free. Travel maybe doesn't need to be as cheap as the networks are currently making it. Also, charging by the minute seems wrong. I guess having a time-based component makes sense to keep the slow chargers from soaking up all the time, but especially an extra high-powered charger, a Porsche Taycan is going to get a whole lot more range out of each minute than a 5-year-old Nissan Leaf, so why should they pay less for the same amount of range? Post-podcast note, it turns out the reason they're charging per minute is that regulations forbid anybody but a regulated utility charging for electricity by the kilowatt, so presumably there will be some legal reforms here. Plug share. If you've got a Tesla, there's less planning. The cars know where the superchargers are. If you have anything else, you really need plug share. There are a few apps in this space, but plug share is the best at showing you a map with all the chargers on it and thus helping you route plan. The reason it works is because it's social. Whenever you hit a charging station, you can check in and leave a note saying whether it's working and how fast it goes. This dramatically reduces the risk of rolling up to a station and finding it broken. I absolutely don't think this journey would have been possible without it. Pro tip. When you're planning a trip on PlugShare, put in all the charges you might be able to use as you go along. Then when you're driving, you can look at your remaining range and your upcoming options, and most choices become pretty easy. It's got a limited but decent Android Auto app that I used a lot. I assume CarPlay does too? Now here's a picture of a Petro-Canada charging station with two chargers, one with my Jaguar I-Pace at it and the other with a Mustang Mach-E. This is in Hope, British Columbia. Futures. A question. Are there enough chargers? Or too many? At the moment, the answer is probably too many. One of the things I really worried about was limping into some charging station to find all the chargers occupied and having to wait for an hour before I could even start. The picture above shows the only time I saw other humans, a young couple with a four-day-old Mustang Mach-E off for a joyride to Kamloops. Otherwise, the chargers we visited showed no signs of life. Somebody spent a lot of money to build an expensive resource that is today largely unused. And here's a podcast-only note. On the trip back, which I didn't blog about but have now completed, on two occasions we had to wait to charge, which is super annoying, and on one occasion somebody else had to wait for us to charge. Having said that, anyone with even a shred of optimism about our future has to believe that there are going to be a whole lot more battery electric cars coming. Here in BC, at the west edge of Canada, we have, here's a link, North America's highest EV uptake, pushing 10% of new car sales. Well, when we were charging at the big Petro-Can station in Kamloops, walking from the two well-positioned chargers to the coffee shop, we went by the gas sales part, which was massive, at least a dozen pumps and cars lined up for every one. At some point, that picture will flip, and there will be occasional vendors that still sell gas, but mostly just slick, fast chargers. I worry that the process will be kind of painful, but I'm sure it'll happen. So I hope someone's planning the transition. Would you do it again? Definitely. And everyone should stop driving fossil vehicles starting now, because the climate crisis is upon us. We can't prevent it now, but we can save lives and reduce destruction if we slash carbon output. There's no excuse not to. That's all, folks.